Hey, college football fans. This podcast is brought to you by Citi. And whether it's football or finance, teamwork matters, which is why Citi is proud to bring you college football's finest. The 2010 Rose Bowl game presented by Citi. This is the ESPNU College Football Podcast. Your host today, Ivan Maisel.
Hello and welcome to the ESPNU College Football Podcast. It's Friday, December 4th, championship week, hot and heavy. This is Ivan Maisel, senior writer at ESPN.com.
This is Todd McShay with an Ivan Maisel that I can finally convince that there's a good slate of games this week.
I am excited.
And this is the one. We've suffered through some mediocre weeks.
Yes.
Just to get here
and just to get to 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, number 1 Florida, number 2 Alabama, the SEC championship game at the Georgia Dome, a rematch of one of the thrilling games of last year, and the expectations for tomorrow are greater.
They are. I mean, because both teams, you know, obviously coming in undefeated, they've shown, I mean, throughout most of the season, they've shown that they can beat any team in the country on the defensive side, and both teams have had to overcome some issues on the offensive side. So it's strange because last year there were different teams that had taken very much different paths to get to the game. This year I see a lot of similarities, and really outside of the quarterback spot. I mean, these two teams almost mirror one another. I mean, they can beat you on special teams. They fast and do so many different things on the defensive side. They have some weapons on offense, both teams do, but certainly not week in, week out showing that firepower. So you would think it would be a defense-dominated type of game, which means it'll probably be 41-39 final.
Well, let's get to the news before we break it down too much. The suspension of Carlos Dunlap, the Florida defensive end, they're so deep on the defensive line.
Yeah, they are. But when he's going, when he's firing, he's arguably the toughest defensive end in the country to guard against, if you will. I think he's phenomenally talented. I really do. When you look at his size, you know, playing around 280 pounds, his power, the quickness, and, you know, everyone talks about the pass rush, and certainly they're going to miss him there. But how about the run game, too? I mean, against this Alabama team that likes to line up and power it right down your throat, you got a big defensive end like that. You know, look at the difference, about a 40-pound difference between Dunlap and Jermaine Cunningham on the other side. And yes, they have depth, but they don't have a Carlos Dunlap. Now, he's played poorly in some games this year, but he's a big game player. And he shows up and you'd think that he would have shown up and had a big game against Alabama. So I think this is a big loss. I think you're going to see Florida a lot like they did last year, bringing Brandon Spikes up from that middle linebacker spot on obvious passing downs, except the problem is, instead of being able to stack one next to the other, like we saw last week at Florida State, you know, Spikes is in the C gap right next to Dunlap. They run a little twist. A lot of extra attention goes to Spikes. It opens up for Dunlap to go in and get the quarterback sack. They did that and were very successful doing that against Alabama last year. Now you can put Spikes next to Cunningham and that will work. But then it doesn't create that one-on-one on the opposite side for Dunlap because Dunlap's not in. So there are a lot of different ways in which this hurts the Florida defense, both as in terms of pass rush and versus the run.
And over and above, does it become a rallying point for the team, or is it become a distraction? You know, and there's no way for us to know that.
Right. You would think, just a gut, you're right, there's no way, but just a gut feeling, you would think that this team would, I don't know, make it a rallying point, but find a way to overcome it where it doesn't affect them from an emotional or preparation standpoint, because the leadership on this team is phenomenal. I mean, I can't find a team, at least in the country, that has better leadership. And it's not just Tim Tebow. It's guys like Brandon Spikes and Joe Hayden, you know, good guys, hard workers, that have been in this program and know how to overcome distractions, as they have even earlier in the season with the Brandon Spikes eye-gashing incident. They overcame that as a team and have gotten stronger because of it.
Now, let me bring up one thing. I spoke with four SEC coaches this week to write a story we posted Wednesday, and they agreed. Everything you said dovetails with what they said. The one thing that they pointed out were the difference in the offense is that Dan Mullen, who Mississippi State did a good job of bottling up the Florida offense. Florida had only one drive for a touchdown from their territory.
Right.
Mullen said, "We tried to keep the ball in Tim Tebow's hands, make him run it. We did not want to give up the big play." Now, conversely, most of them, the coaches I spoke with, said they tried to make Alabama beat them with the big play, not let Alabama pound away and go the length of the field. And does that theory, you know, that's really the polar opposites on offense. Does that theory make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. For Alabama, that's what you have to do. If Alabama's going to beat you by throwing down the field and getting, you know, 30, 40-yard chunks, then, you know, at the end of the game, you tip your hat and you deal with it. And it goes back to, you know, any good coach. Bill Belichick, if you ever read, you know, his book about finding the strength of the team and then doing everything you can to, you know, target it and take that away. And if they beat you in a different direction, then they were the better team that day and they found a way. But you've got to be able to take away the strength. Now, for Alabama, the strength is chipping away, time of possession, chewing up the clock, wearing you down. They want to absolutely look you in the eye and just have exhausted you by the fourth quarter.
Which they have done
to many a team. Yeah. And they did it. They were able to, they were more physical in the SEC championship a year ago. And certainly they're going to try to be again this year, but they're going to have to hit on some big plays in order to win the game. Because I think exactly what you're saying is right. I think Florida is going to bring the safety up, play a lot of cover three and man to man. And I think for my money, there's no individual matchup I'd rather watch in the country at any point in the year than the one between Julio Jones and Joe Hayden at cornerback.
That's right.
That's it. I mean, that's the Julio Jones, now that he's been healthy the last few weeks, is back to being one of the top two or three receivers in the country. And Joe Hayden, you know, maybe I'm crazy, I think he's far and away the best man-to-man cover corner in the nation. So that's going to be an awfully intriguing matchup when you consider how important it's going to be to the game, too. If Hayden takes Julio Jones away, and they're able to cheat up that safety and take away the run. And so,
there's not
that's
a lot
it.
Else. Yeah.
That's it. So Julio Jones
Colin
has got
Peake to, is not going to beat Florida.
Right. I mean, yeah. He'll have a couple catches, yeah. And those other guys are good. Yeah. You know, Marquise Mays and Hanks, I mean, they're pretty good players. But they're not going to provide the big plays that puts Alabama over the top. Now, on the flip side with Tebow, you say, well, take away the strength of the team. The strength of that team is the big play. You know,
exactly.
It's the system. It's a misdirection. It's a fake pitch and then go downtown. And I think Riley Cooper and Aaron Hernandez, the big plays they provide in the passing game, is the strength of that team. And so it'll be interesting because Alabama, so disciplined, typically defensively. They weren't against Auburn, but typically so disciplined and playing zone and keeping their eyes on the quarterback. I think Tebow's going to have to throw the ball effectively to win into a lot of tight windows against zone coverage. And the one time he had to do that early in this year, didn't do very well against Tennessee. So this could be a real tough challenge for Tebow.
Lane Kiffin said to me this week that, you know, to him, Tebow is the difference. But he said he doesn't think there's a better coached team in the country than Alabama for the things you said, the discipline, the lack of penalties. And one stat that he harped on were sacks. Alabama has allowed 14 sacks. Florida has allowed 28. And to me, that was a stark difference.
Yeah, it is. And that's fine because Alabama's not very athletic, not overly athletic along the offensive line.
No.
So that is coaching. That's getting the ball out of the quarterback's hands, keeping a tight end in or running back in when you need to, when you recognize that you're overwhelmed by speed. And I think you're going to see a lot of that in this game. I go back to that. I mean, I could talk this game for 4 hours, by the way. I really could. I think it's a fascinating matchup.
It really is.
You know, from the coach and Tebow going up against this defense of Nick Saban and Urban Meyer, even, you know, against Saban, the offensive minds versus the defensive minds. I think Alabama has to play a lot better on defense, though, if they're going to win this game. I was so disappointed, Ivan, in Rolando McClain on this past Saturday. We've talked about it. I love Rolando McClain. I draft him in the top 10 picks overall. He can be my middle linebacker, and we can go do a lot of good things in the NFL. He was out of position multiple times. He got caught peeking in the backfield against a lot of that misdirection. I know you were at the game, right?
Yes.
And, you know, it wasn't awful. It's not like it happened 10 times, but 3 times is one or two more times per game than it has all season. And then the lack of effort when he got beat trying to get back into plays, it wasn't like him. And hopefully he's able to bounce back from that performance, because Alabama needs a great Rolando McClain if they're going to win this game. Not only, you know, reading Tim Tebow and being able to shut down some of the underneath throws and the runs off of the passing game, but also that inside pitch. We're seeing a lot more out of Florida with a triple option with Tebow running, a running back, and then they flip it inside to Aaron Hernandez on the shuffle pass.
Right.
That's the middle linebacker's responsibility. And a lot of guys, Florida State, got beat badly on it this past week. And if McClain's going to be reading the wrong thing and peeking in the backfield and not disciplined, they could be in for a long day, Alabama's defense, a unit that's been great all season.
Well, listen, Todd, the whole notion that Alabama would be flat for Auburn is astounding.
Right.
And you know, at the end of the week, a week later, we're still talking about it.
I couldn't tell if they were flat or if it kind of happened so quick. They got hit so quickly with that reverse touchdown and the crowd that they were almost stunned, kind of like a heavyweight fighter that gets punched one, you know, early, and it took, you know, 9-10 rounds.
Gus Malzahn did a great job, and then very shrewdly they onside kicked, so the defense was not able to get off the field and hear what they needed to do.
Right. They're still, you know, down on themselves and yelling at one another and all of that, and they've got to go right back on instead of working it out on the sideline. Yeah. No, it was interesting. Yeah. But you know what? They found a way to win.
Just as Florida has done, and as Tebow, I mean, that's his greatest asset for all the things. You know, his stats are good this year, they're not great. He's got 22 straight wins as a starter.
If you look back last year at the SEC championship game, what was the difference? It was Tebow. Converting too. You're right, the fourth quarter is when he stepped up. Throughout the whole game, though, he kept them alive. I went back. Brock Huard and I did that Sunday night college football show, and he was kind of playing around, you know, third down conversions, and we never really got the exact numbers. And I went back and looked on Monday. There were 13 third down possibilities for Florida in that game. 12 if you really look at it, because one resulted in a penalty that they weren't able to convert. It didn't matter. So out of the 12, all 12 times, Tebow had the ball in his hands. He either threw the ball or he ran it. And they converted 7 out of 12 times in third down, which is a very good percentage. So that's when he kills you. It's third downs and inside the 10-yard line, you know, when they're going in the goal line. And they were able to get Alabama last year on inside the goal line on two different plays. One was the speed option, you know, get the ball at the shotgun, and Tebow just runs right at the defensive end, either pitches or takes it in, powers in like a fullback, or they'll spread you out with five receivers, and he'll find one guy that, you know, a mismatch, and hit you. And all three touchdown passes came on that five-wide receiver spread. So
he put the ball in places where only his guys could catch it.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And so that's when he shows up and makes a huge difference. And if everything's equal, or even if Florida's a little bit behind on paper in terms of talent the whole way through, which I think may be the case in this game, Tebow, you have to really account for him, because he's Tim Tebow.
He's Tim Tebow. And that's, ladies and gentlemen, 12 minutes of analysis, and it comes down to he's Tim Tebow.
Right. Yeah, kind of feel useless now after all that.
but you're exactly right. Well, let's look at the other games. The other game that has immediate BCS implications. That's 8 o'clock Saturday night on ABC. And also, Todd, I want you to know this: it's on ESPN Radio, ESPNRadio.com, and that ESPN iPhone app. At 7:30, that's the.
I'm not going to ask you this week if you have your apps.
No, I don't.
Okay.
But Hanukkah's coming, so you never know. Dr. Pepper Big 12 Championship, Texas versus Nebraska. Number 22 Huskers, number 3 Horns. Can the Nebraska defense do enough to stay in this game?
This unit deserves better.
Yes.
You know, it really does. The Nebraska defense has. The fact that Nebraska, as poorly as it has played on offense this year, the fact that they're playing in this Big 12 championship, and I know the Big 12 North isn't very good, but it speaks volumes to how good this defense is. I mean, how many games have they either won or have at least made look respectable this year where the offense has been abysmal? I mean, just bad. Turnovers, mistakes, everything else. But I just don't know against Texas. I don't think that they're going to be able to do enough against the Longhorns. And I say that because I'm still stuck on it. Colt McCoy.
It went right over my head.
Since that Oklahoma game has has decided, you know, I'll run again. You know, if things aren't there, I'll tuck the ball and run. And I think that's where Nebraska's going to get in trouble, because if the pass rush comes and they get close to him, he can burn them then, you know, for getting too far up the field. And then if you start to go back into that gap discipline and not really get after the quarterback, and you give him enough time, Shipley's going to get open, or one of the other receivers that are starting to all step up are going to get open. I think Nebraska will maybe hang around for a half and limit and confuse Texas a little bit, but I think in the second half, this is the type of game, once they make some adjustments and get the ball rolling, that Texas could win by 3-4 touchdowns. I mean, I really think they can run away, and most of it's going to be because Zach Lee at the quarterback spot on the other side. And they're winning. They've won 3 games in a row coming in to this game by limiting him throwing the ball. 18 attempts per game in the last 3 games, and that's the 3-game stretch in which they've kind of gotten themselves back on track.
And Texas has stopped much better, you know, offenses than this.
Now, Texas is going to have to play better than defensively than it did against A&M. But I get the sense that that was, you know, first of all, A&M has a good offense. And they have weapons, and, you know, it was a Thanksgiving game, and you know, they got rolling. Yeah, at College Station. I don't think that defense that we saw on Thanksgiving night was anything close to the one that we'll see in the Big 12 championship. I think Nebraska's in for a long, long day offensively.
Well, if you are correct, then that answers the BCS question. That's, you know, no championship game for TCU or Cincinnati or Boise.
Which is, you know what? It would be a great story and it would be fun for a little bit. Yeah. But ultimately, Texas is deserving and should be there. And the winner of the SEC championship game, that gives us kind of the semifinal game, if you will. And that's what I want to see, at least. I just, you know, Texas versus
Florida.
Texas,
Alabama.
Yeah. To me, that's the story. It's two heavyweights getting in the biggest game of the year and going and fighting it out. And Texas having a better offense than either of those SEC teams. But you can make an argument that, you know, Florida and Alabama both have better defenses. And I think it'll set up a great matchup. And you know what, too? We spent 2.5 months talking about how it went from the 3 finalists, the quarterbacks, and how this season has been a bust. And it was, for the most part. But then all of a sudden, if Florida wins and Texas wins, we're right back to that. You know, Sam Bradford got injured, yes, but Colt McCoy versus Tim Tebow in the final game. You know, I think it would be a special event. I think it would be a lot of fun to watch.
That's a very good point. I was so focused on them and the Heisman, I didn't think about them playing for the really important trophy. That's at 8:00. The other game at 8:00, the ACC championship game, which is on ESPN and ESPN 360, number 10 Georgia Tech and Clemson, a very disappointing week for both of them last week.
Boy, that didn't really do much
to
amp up the excitement for this game. The SEC just
in the middle of the pack, SEC,
right?
You know,
South Carolina stepping up, and it's frustrating because the ACC's gotten better, I think, in terms of top to bottom over the last couple of years, because when they realigned it and all that, you know, we had a couple dominant teams and Virginia Tech has been really good. But I think the conference as a whole is getting better, a little bit better each and every year. But the problem is there's no excitement for this conference. And now in a year where Clemson was really playing well and Georgia Tech was really playing well going into last weekend, there was a little bit of a buzz at least starting to form for that game. And now it's hard to get it fired up for this.
Well, Clemson is the football school in the league,
right,
other than Florida State. And Georgia Tech was in the top 10. I mean, you're right. And that's all dissipated. They're in Tampa, where the championship game has struggled. And that's being polite, you know, to get any traction.
Right.
So
being really polite.
Yeah.
But let me say this. You know, I'm the hype guy. You know, I like to hype the games up and you know, get negative people. I won't mention any names to really get excited. I mean, how about the matchup between arguably the two best running backs in the country? Jonathan Dwyer for Georgia Tech, CJ Spiller of Clemson, and the explosiveness they both bring. I mean, that's enough to get me to watch.
Well, they are two of the best. I will grant you that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking more NFL draft.
Okay,
Toby Gerhardt, obviously, throwing the mix. Mark Ingram.
Yeah, yeah.
Williams of Virginia Tech. There's a lot of really good running backs in the country, but these are two of the top 10, at least, in college
football
this year, and maybe in the top 5.
And Dwyer, after a slow start, came on in the second half of the season.
It's like he's getting into better shape, I hate to say, to be honest. But
it's not an Oregon State deal then.
Yeah.
Well, in Ellis Johnson, the South Carolina defensive coordinator, in talking to him this week about Florida and Alabama, we started talking about their victory over Clemson last week and a rather easy 34-17 win. And he said he was struck by the lack of talent, for lack of a better word, the lack of talent at the line of scrimmage.
Right.
Throughout the ACC. He said, maybe it's just a 1-year thing, but he after watching SEC tape all year, he just said that they knew they could control the line of scrimmage, and that's how they fashioned their game plans, and that's how they beat Clemson.
That's the difference. Yeah. And it's always going to be the difference between the greats and the goods is the line of scrimmage. Because there are athletes everywhere, Ivan. There really are. I mean, you look at some of the schools in the non-qualifying, they have great wide receivers and they have some playmakers. You can find those guys, but the programs that are the elite are the ones that find the best athletes in the trenches, offensive and defensive linemen. And that's what, the USC's and the Florida's and even Ohio State for a while just pump out great offensive and defensive linemen. And that, it's interesting to hear. It doesn't surprise me necessarily. But that's why I also think a system like Georgia Tech has, you can overcome. I mean, Georgia Tech's not sending two or three guys per offensive line to the NFL, but within that system, with the right offensive lineman, technically sound, being in the right place, positioning, you can overcome it for the most part. But when you get up against a mid-level SEC program, I think that's always going to be the big difference.
Well, hopefully it will be a good game. I think the two teams, you always want to watch Kevin Steele create something against that sort of, against
right.
Paul Johnson's offense, Kevin Steele being the Clemson defensive coordinator.
And I'm not pulling for anyone, but I would like to see Georgia Tech in a BCS bowl, go to the Orange Bowl and whichever opponent it is. It just, I don't know, to me, there's a little bit more excitement for that. If Georgia Tech gets in, watching that offense against another deserving opponent, you would think, and just see how it goes, because it's been remarkable to see the success that he has had at Georgia Tech so far, and they continue to, find guys that fit that system. But I wonder, as they continue to find the right guys, are defenses going to start to find certain things to come and stop it? And I think the answer will be yes. So the adjustments that continue to happen over the years with him.
And if it's TCU and Gary Patterson in that defense, that would be a
how
lot
much
of fun.
Would that be?
Yeah,
and that's one of the best defenses in the country. I mean, obviously there's Alabama and Florida, but TCU's up there in the top five. From athletes and scheme, and I think it would be an awful lot of fun to watch.
The Big East, two noon games Saturday.
Right.
Cincinnati at Pittsburgh, number 5, Cincinnati, number 15, Pittsburgh. Again, a game that lost a little bit of luster last week when the Panthers.
Not when the Panthers beat Cincinnati. It's not going to lose its luster.
Right. They're still playing for a BCS berth, and you like Pittsburgh.
I do. I do. I think they got that game out of their system. It's still a team that is not used to being successful, and there was just so much pressure building. They'd beaten Notre Dame. They were looking ahead to Cincinnati a little bit. I know it was a 102nd backyard brawl. But they didn't, they played tight. And they played, it looked like a team that maybe thought they were going to just walk in and beat West Virginia. And then they got punched in the mouth and they just didn't play the way we've seen them play most of the year. They're not nearly as explosive as Cincinnati on the offensive side of the ball. That doesn't take a genius to figure that out.
Right.
But they have weapons. And Bill Stull should play better. And I think they can exploit a lot of weaknesses in Cincinnati's defense that most teams haven't been able to exploit this year. I mean, if Illinois can run up some points on that defense, I think Pitt can as well. And Pitt's defense is as good a unit as Cincinnati's going to face all season long, and or has faced all season long. I think Greg Romeus and those guys, front four pass rush, if they can get to Pike and force him out of his comfort zone, he moves well for a 6'7" guy. But he's still a 6'7" guy, and he doesn't, he's not very agile. And I think they'll get to him. I think they'll cause some turnovers. And I think Cincinnati, the pressure's starting to build.
Exactly.
Too.
Yeah.
Doesn't it look like Brian Kelly's ready to snap?
Well, he always looks like that to me. I mean, he's talking fast and moving that way. But, you know, since the second half of the UConn game, it's not been the same team.
Right.
And, you know, and I don't know. I'm not smart enough to figure out why.
They're putting up points.
Yes.
You know, I think the defense is feeling the pressure. And I think the defense, I think teams too have had now, you know, 9, 10, 11 games to watch tape and figure out what the weaknesses are. And on the offensive side, you've got to, as I said, you've got to get pressure on Pike and you've got to force him into some mistakes. And, you know, I think Pitt is one of the few teams in the country. I mean, I think they still lead the nation in sacks this week. I haven't looked at the updated statistics, but they're right up there. And, you know, they get pressure from that front four and that's the difference. So I'll be in, you know, who knows? Cincinnati could come out and get it going offensively, but I think Pitt playing at home, back in their comfort zone, off of that loss, the motivation, salty group. I think that Cincinnati's in for a little bit of a dogfight, and I think that Cincinnati's going to be shocked by how physical Pitt is as a football team.
Pittsburgh does lead the nation 42 sacks in 11 games. That's almost 42 or 43. I can't do the math. 3.91 per game.
Yeah, I mean,
times
four
11.
Sacks a game is remarkable.
Yeah, it really is.
Most teams average around, you know, 1.5, 2 a game.
Houston, East Carolina, Conference USA, at East Carolina, you know, all of a sudden Skip Holtz, his name being bandied about for a job here and there.
Yeah. He's a good coach. He is a good coach, man. I mean, they're not as talented as that record indicates, and they, you know, they keep winning. And I know they dropped off after getting a fast start a year ago, but, this is a tough challenge because Houston can boogie offensively. They
right.
spread you out. They got a bunch of little quick guys that nobody knows their name, including me, and you know, quick slants and screens and drag plays and all these different things, and poof, they're gone. You know, and Case Keenum's a really good quarterback, but he's playing in a great system with a lot of really quick receivers that fit the profile of what they want to do. This is going to be a tough challenge for ECU.
That game, noon ESPN2, the Cincinnati-Pittsburgh game, noon ABC. Well, the other game I wanted to point out, because it's on radio, Todd, 3 o'clock on ESPN Radio, ESPNRadio.com, and that iPhone app, Arizona at number 18, USC. USC trying to really playing in all likelihood, and we can't say for sure, but possibly for a Holiday Bowl bid.
Right.
And Arizona also playing for a bowl bid. Is this a game, the Arizona defense? I guess we want to see the Arizona defense against
right.
Matt Barkley.
Yeah, and Matt Barkley has had ups and downs. I mean, to say it lightly, I mean, he really has. And you know, there are times that he shows the flashes of the brilliance and everything that, you know, got him to that role as a starting quarterback as a freshman at USC. But, you know, there have been a lot more times recently that he's shown, you know, why he is a true freshman and he's taking his lumps. But, ultimately, I think the Pac-10 has been so good this year, and I think it's disappointing and it's going to be frustrating because they're most likely not going to get a second team in to one of the BCS bowls because
right.
the way it shakes out. But I think it's such a deep conference, and that's why even a game like this where USC is in the middle of the pack and Arizona is taking a couple steps back, but I'm excited to watch it. I think these are two teams that have a lot to play for in terms of younger teams and a program in Arizona that's continuing to build and has had a much better season this year. And USC, obviously so young, you have to build momentum at the end of the season. And this is a chance for this young team on both sides of the ball. They got the win over UCLA. You know, whether you like the incident at the end of the game or not, there's some excitement though. You know what I mean?
Right,
and
sure.
for, you know, in their bubble, that was a huge win. They stuck it to their rival, and all of a sudden we're USC again. You know, there's that confidence, and so if you can get one more win, go to the Holiday Bowl, get a win there, it would be hard not to put USC in the top five coming into next year.
Oh, we're going to do it anyway.
Well, probably, but there's so much momentum. So I think it is an important game for both of these programs. Outside of the SEC game, Ivan, what are you looking forward to the most?
I'm looking, I want to see Texas. I want to see, you know, cause that's the game we're all waiting to see. And if not, then we're all waiting to see who moves up Sunday if Nebraska comes up and beats them. I think you're right. I think Texas will win and I think we will get a Texas SEC champion game.
Yeah. What does Mark Ingram have to do to win the Heisman?
He's got to have he lost his advantage that he had last week.
Big time.
You know, he's got to put up 100 and a quarter, 150 all purpose, 125 rushing at least. You know, which is ridiculously hard to do against Florida, but. And it also, he allowed everybody else to get back into the race. You know, what kind of game does McCoy have? You know, Gerhardt, a terrific closing month of the season.
Does it hurt Gerhardt not playing this weekend?
Absolutely.
I mean, you think about it's unfortunate, and it doesn't say much about us, the voters.
Yeah.
But how much it can all change in 1 week. You know what I mean? And so I just wonder if McCoy goes out and smokes Nebraska, or if Tebow goes out and smokes this great Alabama defense, or Ingram vice versa. You know, do we forget about how outstanding Gerhardt has been week in and week out, because we just haven't seen him in over a week.
And if none of them have a great game, do we then go back to Gerhardt? I mean,
right.
it's going to be an interesting week.
If Gerhardt's not in New York, I think it's
I would think he'd be
wrong.
In New York, if only because there's nobody west of the Rockies. You know, there's no other candidate, unless Kellen Moore siphons a lot of votes away from him, which I don't see happening.
I'll have no, I mean, you can't decide until you've seen every game, but I will have no problem voting him number one.
Oh, no.
None at all. I mean,
either.
You can't have a better season than Gerhardt had.
It's been, he was remarkable to watch against Notre Dame.
He was.
Really was. He really was. Even if they hadn't let him score the last touchdown.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, even the fact that he lined up, I mean, he was exhausted. I mean, he could barely even stand. The fact that he went and lined up, that could have been his Heisman moment if he had pounded through one more guy and got in the end zone, then he just kind of
Kyle McCarthy didn't want to have anything to do with him.
No.
Can't blame him.
No.
Well, that's the ESPNU podcast, college football podcast. This is Todd and I's last regular season show.
This is it, right?
Yeah, I think you might hear from us during the bowls, but until then.
I'm going to miss you, Ivan.
Yeah.
Nice run.
I'm getting choked up.
All right, let's get off the air then.
Thanks for downloading us.
We'd like to thank you for listening to today's show. For more great podcasts, check out the Pod Center page at ESPNradio.com. Hey, college football fans, this podcast is brought to you by Citi. And whether it's football or finance, teamwork matters, which is why Citi is proud to present the 2010 Citi BCS National Championship Game.